Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wisdom Wide Open Radio. Join me, your host, Susie Bonham Craig, as we embark on another journey to open the portal of wisdom. I invite you to participate in the chat room and call in with your questions on 718-305-6584 and press 1 to enter the queue. And now, our journey begins. Welcome back, soulmates and journeyers, for another episode of Wisdom Wide Open Radio. It's Sunday, November 22nd, actually the anniversary of JFK's assassination. So this brings to mind a lot of things that are opening up and to us about what's, I guess, that knowing that everything isn't as it appears to be. And we're really, really thrilled to be taking this journey this evening on a topic that's really close to my heart, because it's about engaging ultimate possibility and what's available to us. And we're very, very happy to have with us this evening from Down Under, Robert J. Anthony, who is a film producer of the What If DVD movie. And before we get started, before we invite Robert to join us, I'd like to make a few announcements. We've been out of touch a little bit about how to keep in contact with us here at Wisdom Wide Open Radio. We just want to let you know that we so appreciate you reaching out to us and joining us on these really inspiring and journeys helping you to open the portal to your own wisdom and, you know, find out what resonates with you, with your spirit and with your heart and what you're called to be doing. So just like to make an announcement, we're really thankful for technology today. So there's many, many possible ways to reach out to us. So if you're on the show page, please tweet the show page. We also have a Facebook group that has over 1,600 members and growing rapidly. So we're really excited about that. So if you're on Facebook, you know, seek us out and join the fan page or the group page, and you'll be receiving updates on the show and interact with people in the group. So look forward to it. It's a lot of fun. And we appreciate you using your virtual megaphones to, you know, share with your friends and have them join us and you. Okay. Another announcement I'd like to make, which is really in connection, but not directly with what we'll be speaking about this evening, but it's really a validation to what the momentum that we're picking up now and moving forward with what it is, the changes that we, you know, that we're seeking and opening up to and making the world a better place for all of life and all of humanity. So I just wanted to announce that the Living in the Fire of Change conference is a sacred action and social transformation conference. And for those of you who have been listening on the show, you know that Barbara Marks Hubbard and James O'Dea have been our guests on the show, and they are featured speakers at this conference. And their mission is actually to laterally engage, empower, and inspire individuals and communities in a comprehensive real-time evolutionary event that can instantaneously seed a shift in the paradigm and implements a tangible forum plan for ongoing local synergy and lasting change. So let your voice be heard and learn ways to thrive during these times of great change. Come in and ask questions, make statements, take actions. And this conference is truly held in esteem and blessed by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and helps reconnect individuals and communities with great purpose to their inner calling and collective action. So we appreciate that Molly Rowan presents along with many conscious sponsors, and you can visit www.livinginthefireofchange.com to find out more and register. The conference takes place on December 11th and 12th at the Salt Palace in Salt Lake City, Utah. So thank you so much, Molly, and Barbara and James O'Day and all the people that are making that really possible to shift our momentum and get moving. Okay. Now, before I bring on Robert, I'd just like to say hi to everyone in the chat room. Thanks for joining us. And tell you a little bit about Robert. For many years, Robert Anthony was a CPA and was associated with the hospitality industry. And more recently, he found himself providing financial and management consulting services to the National Health Service in the United Kingdom. And through his experience, he opened his eyes to the problems that many people are trying to deal with daily, and then the frustration that is being felt in both business and health services worldwide. So he's particularly interested in finding ways to help people realize that they're able to move their individual circumstances beyond the point where they currently find themselves by simply using a selection of the natural resources freely available to us, you know, plus the exercise and loads of fresh air. So I want to welcome Robert, and we'll be Robert, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Susie.
Oh, welcome. I'm so happy to have you join us this evening.
Thank you, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in.
Yes, so, Robert, before we move on with you explaining about this DVD and what this project is looking like, to all of us out here in the world, beyond Down Under, I'd like to just play for our listeners the opening of the trailer featuring Don Tolman. Would that be okay?
That'd be fantastic.
Okay, listeners, I'd like you to tune in and just really listen to the trailer. To our visitors on the show page, the trailer is available for your listening convenience. Please don't do it while on the show, because we'd like you to really tune in and hear what Robert has to share with us today. All right, hold on, everyone.
What if enough people could wake up that there would be a moment of spontaneous equilibrium, the 100 monkey effect? And that's what I'm hoping that this film can do for people, is to help them to wake up and realize what you experience as a result in your life really does probably come down to your ability to consistently perform and execute the behaviors that bring the result that you seek. What if that's really true? What if there really isn't a secret?
Wow, Robert. What if?
I know.
What if everything we believe about life is wrong? What if there is a better way? And I'd like really to share with our listeners, maybe give some insights about how this just filled your heart and you had no choice but to open it up and let it flow.
Yeah, well, I'm just getting over the goosebumps because even though I'm such an integral part of it, every time I hear Don speak, it just brings shivers to me. Because what he says is so true. This has been an amazing journey, and as Susie rightly said at the beginning, it started off as my being a CPA, and I was in a management role in the United Kingdom where I found myself in a variety of roles, but what I found was very consistent through that was the lack of confidence that people had and how they automatically put themselves down on a daily basis. And I found that very hard to cope with. And through some opportunities that had arisen to me in my sporting career, I began to realize that what was going on was the internal dialogue that people had with themselves and the little voice in our head that really should be our best friend, but we allowed it to become our worst enemy because the dialogue mostly was doubt. The dialogue was putting ourselves down. And I found that really sad, and because I realized that you could go out on the street and you could bump into anybody and they would give you all the abuse that you wanted. You didn't have to do it to yourself. So I began to look for ways that would change that perception that people had of themselves. And I went through a whole lot of very unsavory incidents in London where at a point in time I was virtually asked to sack an entire accounting department. And I found that absolutely abysmal, because these people were actually an asset, not a liability. And I think if every organisation in the world slowed down to realise that the sum total of an organisation is actually the sum total of its people, it's got nothing to do with the plant, furniture, equipment or the stock. If you take the people out, every organisation in the world's got nothing. And yet, whilst it's the biggest expense on a profit and loss statement, we don't actually see it transferring to a balance sheet. And I was wrestling with this dilemma when I was asked to perform this unsavoury deed. And my wife said to me one night, we'll do something about it. And I began to write a paper on human resource accounting and to get out there and show organisations that they really should begin to appreciate their people more. And out of that journey, I came up with a pretty far-fetched idea that I could actually do something about this by coming up with a DVD or a production where in a uniform manner we got the message out and began to show organisations that the better they treated their people, the more profitable they would be. And through a set of circumstances, I found myself coming back to Australia for family reasons, and I realised that I'd actually been brought back here for a purpose, and the purpose was to complete this project. So we went through a period of around about 12 months of trying to get it together. As I got the basis laid down, a movie came out called The Secret. And I was rather amazed that it took people to a place, and it had an amazing effect on the world. But what I then discovered in looking at it was that it didn't really give people the tools to proceed. It excited people, and it created a lot of interest around the world and a lot of hope. And I don't think that the people that were behind it initially actually realised what they were going to do. Subsequently, of course, everybody saw the error of their ways, and I didn't want that to happen with our project. I wanted to create something, as I initially said, that went into corporations and showed them how to uplift people and therefore get better results. Because if you give people back their self-esteem and their dignity, we perform amazingly well. But the moment that our negative talk is reinforced by somebody around us telling us that we're bad, we get the results that we want. And I think Don says it in that opening, that you know, we seek the results. But what if we could change the way that all went on? Now, there's also a part in the movie where Don talks about our healthcare systems, and I believe that's a topical point in the US at the moment with what President Obama's endeavouring to do. Don asks the question that if we're so smart, why is cancer getting more and more each year? And I won't have the order right, but he goes through the predominant diseases that are affecting us: diabetes, asthma, heart conditions, and of course cancer. He asks the question, if we're so smart, why is it getting more? Why isn't it getting better? Why aren't the statistics going down? And it took several months for me to realise that statement actually transfers into every area that we address. I'll just digress a little bit. The Wheel of Life was the vehicle we chose to get our message out. We chose it simply because it shows people how to balance their lives. Now, we have a variety of wheels around the world. Various health coaches, various lifestyle coaches use it to show people where they're putting too much emphasis on in their life. It is a product that starts off with zero at the center and 10 at the outside perimeter. And you're asked to grade yourself in each of these sections, and you can see it, and some of them will look a little bit different than others, but most of them are very imbalanced. And you know, the question that most of us ask is, if this was a wheel on your bike or on your car, how far do you think you would go? Because it's very lopsided. What we began to realize very early in the project was that it didn't have to be perfect. It just has to be symmetrical. So you can be a perfect 5 or you can be a perfect 6. It's where it sits best for you because the choices are yours. They're not your coaches. They're not anybody external to it. So we began to look for a way to show people that it wasn't perfection you were seeking, it was symmetry. The other thing that we found was that in talking to a number of people around us who became very engrossed in the project was that nobody actually knew where the Wheel of Life came from and how long it had been around for. We had various timelines, and I was very fortunate that we had a PhD in energy medicine and energy psychology who was attracted to the project, and she kindly volunteered to do the research for us. Unbeknown to myself, that was what she'd based her thesis on for her PhD. And one day at the production studio, she brought me a stack of books, which I couldn't see over the top of. And the universe guided me to one in particular. I opened it up and I landed on a page where we had the Wheel of Life Dharma, which was actually the precursor for the modern Wheel of Life that we all use out there in coaching. And I began to read, and I got to a part in it where it shared with us that in 650 BC, Buddha put the current Wheel of Life Dharma into its pictorial representation, or around about 650 BC. So in an aha moment, I turned around to Dr. Mary Ann and I said, wow, that's amazing. 3,000 years and we're still beating ourselves up for the same old reason. And she just looked at me and she said, Robert, you still don't get it. And I said, what's that? She said, well, before the Wheel of Life or the Wheel of Life Dharma, it was actually known as the Great Round and the Spiraling Circle before that. And then she shared with me that before that it was called the Circle of Life. And I said, well, Disney actually got it right in The Lion King. And we all had a laugh. And she said, yeah. She said, it's been around since we first started living in social groups. And I was just absolutely humbled at the time that our forefathers and our foremothers and basically every native culture around the world, I'm sorry, I'm getting a bit choked, had gotten it right. And I began to research indigenous cultures everywhere. I found it was prolific through the Native Americans. I found it with our own Aboriginals. I found it throughout Europe in their indigenous cultures. And I began to realize that it was something that was common to each and every one of us. And it was so simple, it was hard. And I suppose I began to get the realization then that because it wasn't a fancy gadget that we couldn't put up on the internet or we couldn't put into a Playboy station or one of the electronic gizmos, that it had been overlooked, because all you really need is a circle and a piece of paper. And it has the most profound effect on us when we see right before us a simple drawing that shows us where our life has gone out of balance. And So we began to look for a way that we could get that message out there, and we came up with the What If Project. What we then found is that the law of attraction kicked in, and we had people coming to us from all walks of life saying, I want to be involved in this project. And so what we've endeavoured to do is to show people that in 8 key areas of our lives, we need to have balance, that by doing that, we're going to go forward, we're going to be more powerful and more enriched in the process. The 8 areas that we chose to address were health and wellness, wealth and finance, relationships, lifestyle, personal growth, our careers, our environment and our spirituality. We've tried to make it at a level where everybody can understand it. We didn't want to make it something where you have to go out and research or spend money. We've tried to make it into a complete journey. We're in the early days of the project, even though the DVD's been out there for about 10 months. It really hasn't gained the traction and the recognition that it quite deserves. And that's what we're hoping that information sessions like this will achieve, is that we will impart the messages to people that finally there is something we can do. There's something we can do to help ourselves. We shouldn't be relying on other people to come in and be big brother or their mums and dads forever and a day, because we're at a point in time where we have to make decisions. We've created a situation out there where so many things around us aren't working. We can ask the question of what's happened on the economies of the world lately. If we're so smart, how do we get it wrong? We didn't learn from the recessions and the depressions of the past. Our greed factor takes over to the point where we've become self-destructive. There are other things that surround all of this. There's a, if you care to go into the prophecies that are around, there's a Cree Indian prophecy that tells of a time, and it's what I find absolutely amazing was that it was a Cree woman who sat in a pristine environment and forecast all the things that are going on today, fish dying in rivers, trees dying from the top down, and we can interpret it as the acid rain. But one thing that they all have in common, these prophecies, is that they talk of a time when the people with the knowledge will come forward and they will take us by the hand and they will lead us out of our demise or potential demise. And I believe that we're at that time. We're going into, as most people will know, the year 2012 in the Mayan calendar. And I believe that we're going into the age of Aquarius, we're going into the age of imagination. And I also believe that we're going into the age of love and the oneness that all of these prophecies talk about. I think that we're all here for a purpose. And Don Tolman says it, that we're here for each other. I think we're growing up to the point where we realise that other than our accents, other than maybe some facial appearances and the colour of our skin, we're all the same underneath.
Yes.
I also like to remind people that we have this innate intelligence that we just can't get over. There's not too many of us that don't get up and walk around and we don't even think about it. It just takes over. Are you still there, Susie? Hello?
Yes, I'm here. You're still on.
Yep. I use the analogy of somebody walking down the street and we see somebody fall over and hurt themselves. And our first instinctive reaction is to stop and help that person. And then sometimes, unfortunately, what happens is that we're reminded that, whoops, I shouldn't get involved. Whether it's parents or whether it's the advertisers or the other influences in our life, that, you know, we might get sued or the other person may not appreciate what we're doing, and we walk on. But the first reaction we have as human beings is to stop and help each other.
Yes, that's true. I find that.
You do. And unfortunately, we allow other factors to come in. I think that we're heading back to that time. We're moving into our hearts and out of our heads. I think that the dialogue such as this show provides, that the opportunities that the internet is providing, and it's breaking down the barriers. And I don't like to say this, but we're not as controlled as what we used to be. Yes, there's things that go on that we probably don't know about, and we can get caught up in that, but it's not going to save the situation we find ourselves in. Now, the perfect example is anywhere around the world, you go and watch children in a playground. They don't care what colour the other child is. They don't care what their accents are. They just go and play. And then, unfortunately, we reach a time in our lives where we teach discrimination, we teach hatred, because we say you shouldn't be playing with them or you shouldn't associate with them, and we pass these habits on, but they're not natural. I had a situation in London where I had a young South African accountant working for me and he was carrying the weight of the world on his shoulders because of apartheid, and I took him to a playground just like I described and showed him the children of various nationalities playing together. And I had to remind him that as he grew up, his parents and his grandparents kept him away from the black children that he liked to associate with. And that gradually over a period of time, he was taught to be discriminating. And even though he went through those processes, it still didn't sit very right with him. And I think that's part of the dilemma that we face. We're carrying around so much guilt, but let it go. It doesn't pay us, it's holding us back, because we can't change the yesterdays in our lives, but we can look at today and tomorrow and we say, well, we're going to make a difference. We don't have to do things. And I'm very privileged at the moment to be working with Indigenous leaders in Australia. And if anybody knows about Australia's very sad history and what we've done to these people, what I find absolutely amazing is the dignity with which they carry themselves and the pride with which they have for being who they are. They rise above circumstances that we can't even imagine. In Australia, I don't know if you realise it, but it was into the 1980s before most Aboriginals could even get a birth certificate. We went to such lengths, or our governments went to such lengths to malign them. What I've since found out is that it really has to do with their culture. They're one of the oldest cultures on the planet. We've found through satellite imaging, they've found farms that go back 35 to 40,000 years ago where these people actually had industries. I've found the same thing in researching parts of Native American Indians, that they had cultures that would make the hairs on the back of our neck stand up. And yet our forefathers went to such lengths to malign them and keep their wisdom buried because it ran contrary to ours. But what amazes me is that if we look into those cultures and we look into their history, their folklore, and the stories that were passed on, they actually have the answers that we need today. And the whole emphasis of this DVD is, what if there is another way? What if there's a better way? We have to stop now and slow down and start to consider those options. And in the process, to tame the voice that's in our head that's been the negative, destructive force that we've grown up with. I had a sad incident that occurred within my family where I was doing a course and I was reminded of all of these things because we become complacent about things. And it was my daughter. And basically what happened was that she was going through a dilemma at school where kids were picking on her. And I said to her, I said, "Hun, what does that feel like?" And she said, "Oh, it feels terrible." I said, no. I said, "What does it feel like, the fact that you're talking to yourself and you're making this even worse than what it really is?" And she looked at me in amazement and she thought for a moment that she'd let the secret out. And the secret to her was that this voice in her head was talking so loud that I could hear it. And then I just put my arm around her and I said, "Guess what? We've all got one." I said, "Mine." I said, "I learned a long time ago to ask it to be my friend and stop being so self-destructive. And the days that it does get that way, I ask it if it can just go take a walk somewhere else while I get on with things." And that I explain to it very respectfully that I don't have time for that at the moment. Now, I was fortunate enough to learn that through a sporting career. I had success in a number of areas of something where I wasn't supposed to. I was the wrong shape. I was the wrong size. And I don't want to get up there and beat my own drum, but if we all look at the perfect example that I think the whole world can think about is Michael Jordan, who was told that he wouldn't be what he ended up being, that he just didn't want to listen to that. Right. Now, I've been in a situation where I've coached a down here in Australia, we have surf lifesaving, and I was fortunate enough to have a lovely career there. But I was asked towards the end of my career to coach a crew, and they were the biggest pack of also-rans that I've ever come across. And I tested them out, and I was rather blunt and rude to them initially to find out how much they really wanted to succeed.
Okay, go ahead.
What I found in that journey was that those guys had got themselves into a mindset where they couldn't succeed. And so what I did, rather than coach them how to row, I coached them how to get into their head and for them to realize that the moment they got over their baggage, their boundaries, once they explored what their real potentials were, that nobody could get in their way. Now, they weren't as strong and they weren't as physically presentable as the rest of the people that they were competing against. But by the end of the season, they had a mindset that they couldn't be stopped. They knew that they were going to win because very gently I coached each one of them individually, because we've got to remember it's an individual journey. I got through the baggage of these guys, and they all but in result, they went on to be national champions. Unfortunately, the one area that I overlooked was my friend who steered them in the final race of the year, and he hit a judge's stand and they got disqualified because he couldn't believe how far in front they were. It was my oversight. But what I learnt then, and what I learnt through my experiences in London and in management, was that the moment that we give people back their self-esteem and their dignity, the moment we show them that we believe in them, that we love them, that we trust in them, that they're an adult in 90% of their lives, why should they go back into a kindergarten when they go to work? They excel. People grow. People are amazing.
Yeah, isn't that true, Robert, that really, I mean, as far as I know, in my schoolhood years, you know, and I'm midlife right now, is that I was very, very rare to receive any kind of recognition, let alone encouragement, from, you know, my upbringing as far as organizations, institutions, schools, things of that nature. So we spend a lot of time trying to jump through these hoops of expectation with a sense of inadequacy, because we're really not sure if we got it right, and you know, how we bring this along with us, so that every instance, every connection with every other human being, be it in whatever relationship that we happen to encounter, we're always questioning our adequacy in our communication, in our articulation, whether, you know, what other people are thinking about us. And I know that we've gotten so far removed. But before you go on, I just wanted to touch, before we get too far removed from it, with regard to the Wheel of Life. And you mentioned, you know, really having this origin as far as back as Buddha, you know, and that Buddha consciousness. And I know you mentioned also the modern coaching you know, circles and tools that we're using today, and I know some of them spin off of memetics, and that's when they include within that Wheel of Life or those environments of you, but the memetics really make up those belief systems and indoctrinations, record collections, whatever that you want to call them, that have really gotten in the way, so that we could take a look at the difference between where we are, where we want to be in each areas of our lives in this Wheel of Life, to make up that symmetry and to seek that balance and really be aware and awaken to, just as your daughter, as you, you know, facilitated for your daughter, gee, what's really going on? And, you know, and I believe this is what you're doing, is talking about taming that voice inside your head and really pinpointing, you know, who's doing the talking here? You
well,
know,
that's
and,
right.
And what feels good and what doesn't feel good? You know, what feels off and what feels right?
Well, at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter. Because I used to do a lot of out-of-the-box type situations in London. I would have people come to me on the first day of an interim assignment, because I would usually go in as an interim director of finance or an interim something. And within a very short period of time of sitting down, you would have people coming into the office and welcoming you to the organisation. And I thank them for that. And then they would, and I, they, they'd, they'd say really bizarre things like, we're glad you're here.
Right.
And straight away, I could see the inadequacies going on. And I'd say to them, well, why? You don't even know who I am. The long and the short of it all is that they would virtually get around to saying, well, you can tell us what to do. And I found that really strange. Because, as I said earlier on, we go to work and it's like we go back into kindergarten.
Looking for direction.
Yeah, that's right. Because we lack that self-confidence. Now, confidence can be fantastic. It also can be destructive. What I mean is that we get ourselves out of bed, we feed ourselves, we get ourselves to and from work. But the moment we walk through the front door, so many of us go back into the subservient role. We forget that we're getting paid an adult wage to do an adult job. We know what we're doing, but we lack that confidence. Oops, if I do this, if I don't get permission, what's going to happen? And in doing that, we actually contain ourselves and slow ourselves down. Very seldomly do people stop and think, well, yeah, I know how to do this. But we're looking for that affirmation, we're looking for that guidance all the time because we're very scared to step outside of that square. But then the moment we walk out the door, we know that we can get on some transport or we can get into a car and we live our lives again. What we forget is that we're at work or we're involved in work for the second greatest percentage of our week. The greatest percentage of our week is spent sleeping. And then if you take the hours that you're either at work or travelling to and from work, there goes the second biggest chunk of your week. So why don't we treat it the same as we do the residual bit where we've got... We go home, we take charge. We're the parents or we're the leaders in our house or we grow into those positions. And yet, for this one significant period of our week, the majority of us like to go back to being the little child again.
Mm.
And I asked myself, what would happen if people could actually excel and grow there? What would it do to the rest of their lives? How better would you feel in what you're doing outside of that environment? How more impactful could you be in your local communities, your churches, the groups that you get involved in, even media like this, that if you could take that power and then transfer it to others. And this is the whole purpose of the project that we've got undergoing. Unlike the others I don't like to make the comparisons, we've designed this, and we're still in the very early stages of making this the complete journey. We plan to have a member site because the other thing that concerned me in moving around was that we've got to realise that it's the legacies that we leave behind that are important. And I go back to the Indigenous cultures in the emphasis that they've placed in their societies on ensuring that the young were well looked after. And I think that that's where we're being remiss today. It saddened me in London to spend a lot of time in an area called Brixton, and it's predominantly West Indian, poorer black people, for want of a better expression. And what I found very sad there was to talk with children and to find out that they believe that fruit comes from a supermarket, that milk comes out of a carton. There's this disconnection with what our whole purpose on the planet is, that so many children in big cities don't realise the connection between a field, the grass, a cow, water, and this byproduct called milk. They don't understand this magical connection between things growing in the earth and its connection to our body and how it energises it and feeds it. And the advertisers have taken over so much, and I won't go down this route because I don't want to beat up on multinational stores and all the rest of it, but we're losing it. The idea that an apple or a piece of a carrot comes out of a supermarket, it's sad. And so the idea of the site eventually will be to provide educational facilities. We're looking to use the proceeds from the DVD to develop sites for children that will be free to go into their schools and to provide information, because we don't believe that those resources are out there in a viable way. I go back to the gentleman that you heard at the beginning, Don Tolman. I believe that Don is a living national monument that still hasn't been given his full recognition in America. Don comes from Park City in Utah, and I find him one of the most incredible people on the planet. He is just such a profound person. His own journey has been rather sad, in that the information he has to share with us has been held back for a number of reasons. But what I found absolutely amazing about the man is that he just doesn't stop. I mentioned prophecies, and there are a number of prophecies around, and he believes that one of the reasons he lectures so prolifically in Australia is that it's part of the recovery process that we're about to go through. And I believe that we're going to pull through it. I believe that with all my heart that we are going to wake up and we're going to forget the boundaries, and we're going to forget the stories that we've had passed on to us from the past. And there's shifts going on everywhere at the moment, and they're beautiful shifts. There's a coming together, and as I mentioned before, these prophecies, there's this oneness that's beginning to take over. People are waking up everywhere, and we want to speed that journey up. The whole idea of this DVD is to get into families and to get them reconnected again, that we encourage the bonding and the re-establishment of those family values, that we are there again for each other. And again, it's what I found in London, and I got taught a lot of lessons from our next door neighbours who were of Indian descent. And what I saw there was the complete bonding of the family. You had three generations almost living in the one house.
Mm.
And the beauty of the grandparents sharing with the children, to watch it, that interchange, it was heart-wrenching. And in Australia, we're very fortunate to have a lot of people from the Orient, and I see the same thing again. My work with the Indigenous people here, the respect that they have for their elders, the respect that they have for their children, they are there for each other, even through the most obscene sets of circumstances, they're there for each other. Now, we may not understand all their customs and all their traditions, but if we respect it, and if we allow ourselves to learn from it, I think we're going to be richer and wiser people for it.
No, I totally...
You go.
No, I was going to say I totally agree with that. And one thing I just wanted to point out about, you know, what many people are pointing to is the factor here in the United States, especially, is because this is a newer country, and we migrated, you know, came in, immigrated to this particular country from all these places, that a lot of our family connections were displaced. We didn't grow up, you know, as the generations evolved, we weren't growing up with that same connection of family. Although you do have, you know, certain pockets across the country where, you know, they've been here for several generations and, you know, they held that coming together. But there are a lot of people that came here on their own, left their families, you know, left what was nothing. They had nothing left where they were. They came here and they started out new, but I definitely see the disconnect that you're talking about, you know, here especially.
Well, it's not
and having theory. Having really not, you know, had taken the Native Americans in this particular land and shoved them to the side on reservations and whatnot, that, you know, we didn't really get to experience that when we came here.
Well, you did actually, but it's a point that's often overlooked, and this is another area where I find Don Tolman actually absolutely incredibly wise, is that democracy actually came from the Native Americans. Your founding fathers actually noticed the democratic way with which they ran their tribes. And if you slow down and have a look at the history, that's where it came from. We're led to believe that it was Greeks, but we had hierarchies throughout Europe. And you're not the only ones that are disconnected. We're terribly disconnected down here because half of us came down here as convicts. So we've got no idea where we came from. And I think the other sad fact that I've found, and I do have a few African-American friends, is that they suffer the same problem, probably more so, because at least we know that we were Irish, German, or whatever. Those poor people have got no idea because of the circumstances where they were just ripped off the land and taken by force or whatever and dropped down somewhere. They've got the total disconnect. We can go back to shows like Roots. But at the end of the day, does it really matter? What really matters is where we're at now. And I've got a group of people off to the side where we're designing a healthcare system that can be utilised anywhere in the world. And it's a bit of a digression, but I'll just share this with you for a moment. We were going through the basis of setting this system up, and I want it so that people can do it in supermarkets, gas stations, chemist shops or pharmacies, wherever people want to go. You don't have to go to a GP surgery or surgery. Anyway, I went through all of this and we got to a point where I asked them how long it was going to take to do this. And the programmer said, take about 18 months to 2 years. And I said, why so bloody long? And he said, well, we've got to go back in and we've got to look at your family history and we've got to do this and do that.
Yeah.
And I said, hang on. I said, now you're sounding like an actuary.
Yeah.
I said, what's that got to do with me? And I said, my body is my body. And we get caught up in what they want us to believe in the education systems. And I've got my own views on this. And if you ever fortunate enough to speak to Don, and we're going to try and have him on this show, and I'm going to force Susie into a corner now. But,
oh, no, I definitely, we plan on it.
he's
I already have a note. Yes, I already have a note into Don, so...
Okay. Well, I got a thumbs up from him yesterday. I was just going to share that with you later. But what I was getting to was that our bodies actually know what's going to happen to it several weeks in advance. And then we go into denial. We come up with all sorts of excuses as to why we're not feeling well. But our body's trying to tell us that unless you do something and do it fairly quickly, then in a few weeks' time, you're going to fall over into a bit of a heap, and you will have to go to a doctor's surgery or something like that.
Right.
So the idea was to find a way of monitoring and forecasting when that was going to happen way in advance of the major event occurring. So it's looking for the signs, and I think that that's where we have to go back to the very basic building blocks of where we are as a race. And I use the term Indigenous a lot, but when we slow down and we think about it, we're all Indigenous something. The benefit that the Native Americans and all of these tribes have over the rest of us is exactly what you said before, Susie. They know what Indigenous they are. We all emigrated out of Europe, which was the biggest mixing bowl of all time, because of the closeness of everything, and we've forgotten what our roots are. But have we really? It's the reason why we find ourselves at a crossroads so often in our lives where we don't feel good about things, because our intuition and our innate intelligence is in conflict with what we've been taught. And is it? I believe we're getting to that time, with the time of imagination, the time of love, the age of Aquarius, where we've got to start to listen to what our this intelligence that we're born with is passing on to us. So how do we get past the fact that you're the product of a number of generations of people? What is passed on in our genes? Don has a saying that with practice, we can talk to and we can be with anybody who's ever lived in history. Now, we've all heard the exponents of these theories say, well, you know, we're all breathing molecules into the air, and therefore we're sharing bits and pieces of each other with one another. So effectively, we're the sum total of everybody that's ever been, because we're all breathing in the same concoction, the same mixture that they've breathed out into. And so we've all got part of Einstein in us, we've all got part of whoever lived. You know, you've all got part of Donald Trump in you.
That's true, that we, even what we think with our thoughts goes out to the mm-hmm. collective, and the fact that every thought that has ever been thought still exists, it's just been expounded upon and expanded, and that's so exactly we all have this innate intelligence available mm-hmm. to us.
Exactly, and we then go out of our way with our, I'm trying to pick the right words now, and I don't want to offend anybody, but our Western intelligence, and we begin to lose it. And you know, I'll digress again just for a moment. I had an incident in London with my daughter's second assessment, and I went into the classroom. We had half an hour that was allocated to us, and her teacher was there, and she gave me a very rapid report in a few minutes about how Rhiannon was such a bright child. She was very helpful in the classroom. She was teaching a number of Russian children at the time who had emigrated to London how to count, because she had 10 fingers and 10 toes. She could teach them to count up to 20. She was 6 at the time. And she was rather proud of how she could achieve this. And then promptly, I think it was after about 7 or 8 minutes, my interview ended. And I thought, this is strange. I've got half an hour.
Oh, no proverbial buts.
Yeah. I said to the teacher, I said, Miss Melissa, is that it? And she said, yes. But what I did notice about her was that her body demeanor had changed greatly. And she was now very nervous about the whole process. So I asked her again, and she guaranteed me that that was it. So I got up and I left the room, and I noticed that she couldn't even look at me. So I went over to the door, I opened the door and I shut it, and I stood there. Eventually she looked up, and she got the greatest shock of all time, because I was there. The long and the short of this story was that what was wrong was that they were very concerned about my daughter at show and tell. What I found out was that she used to bring all of these objects into the classroom, and she used to tell people how she'd been to Hogwarts and Neverland the night before, and she'd brought these things back with her. And I said to this teacher, I said, is that the only thing that's worrying you? And she said, well, yeah, we find it rather disturbing.
Oh,
and I
boy.
Said, let me tell you about my job. I said, I'm a consultant, and I said, I get to travel around the country. I said, and I go to areas where I've never been before, and I said, and if I see a plant or a flower that I know Brianna's never seen before, I said, I stop the car and I grab a piece of it. And I said, and that night, just before she goes to sleep, and we've told stories, I said, you know, I'll give her a pat on the head, and I'll wish her a bon voyage and, you know, happy trip to Neverland or wherever she planned to go to that night. And then when she was sound asleep, I would put that object under her pillow. And if I couldn't find anything, I would get a piece of cotton wool. I would get something around the house, and I would put it in her hair or something like that, so that the next morning she remembered bumping into a seagull in a cloud, or she remembered going to a part of Neverland or Hogwarts where she'd never been before, and she remembered going into the garden and picking that leaf or that flower. And the teacher sat there and looked at me as if I was absolutely crazy. And I said, surely, as a teacher, you're going to realize that you have the greatest gift that God has ever given to anybody. I said, you're at a time where you can enrich these children by showing them that with their imagination that absolutely anything is possible. The moment we begin to imagine a better future, the moment we begin to imagine that we can make a difference, the moment we can begin to imagine that we are here for each other, that race, creed, all of these excuses, religion, it doesn't matter. We're here for each other. And it's time that we imagined a better future. And this teacher just still didn't get it. My children, and I've remarried, my children are now 12 down. Not one of them doesn't believe in Father Christmas. They believe in the Easter Bunny. They believe in all of these stories because they can imagine it. They imagine it day in, day out. They write the most incredible essays. They write the most incredible letters to each other. Because all they do is sit there and allow their imaginations to go wild. Now, we take that away from them.
Mm.
And, Don, you know, if you're fortunate enough to come across Don, and I keep coming back to Don because he is a very dear friend of mine, but, you know, we've got 18 people on this DVD, and I'd be remiss if I didn't recognise that. But this gentleman, this national treasure that I believe you people have, has got so much to share with us. And he talks about this, how the school systems, the learning systems that we've got discourage children from being imaginative. But we sit and look at them, and it's such a limiting process that we put ourselves through. And, you know, I think if every one of us is honest with each other, that we've all experienced that. And this whole project is about giving people back that opportunity to show people how great they really are, because we're unique. There's no other Susie Bonham Craigs around the world. You're unique, and each and every one of us listening to this call is a special treasure that is unique. And it's time that we woke up and we realised that we have a role to play, that the limiting belief systems that we've put on ourselves in the past, they just don't matter. You know, I had another iconic story of somebody in London who came to me for a meeting, and she sat down and she was, her shoulders were sagging down, and I said, what's the matter with you? She said, oh, the stress is weighing me down. And I jumped up and down with joy, and I said, fantastic, you're the person I've been looking for.
Right.
She said, what? I said, I've been looking for you for years. And I did a little exercise with her where I passed a pen backwards and forwards, and I said, can you squeeze it? And she gave it back to me. I said, oh. I said, now you've done it. I said, my pen absolutely loves you. I said, but we're going to have an exchange here. And she said, what are you talking about? And I said, well, my pen wants to keep coming back to you. I said, look, I'll do you a trade. I said, I've wanted to find out about this stress stuff for a long, long time. I said, so you've got so much of it. I said, I'll trade you some of your stress for my pen. And she looked at me as if I was an absolute nutter. And that's a technical term. And I said to her, I said, well, what's the problem? I said, is it so precious you can't give me some of it for my pen? And finally I forced her into a situation. She said, no, I create, and she stopped. And I said, you were going to say? And she said, it doesn't matter. I said, no, you were going to say something. I said, it sounded like you were going to say you created it yourself. And she said, yes. I said, do you see how foolish that is? And she said, I do now. And I said, you know, I sit here working back of a night time, and I said, I watched this chief executive officer bound across the car park. I said, she's like a little lamb or a deer bounding through a field. I said, she jumps into her BMW and she screams off into the sunset. And she said, does she really? I said, well, she may as well. I said, they're paying you how much a year? And she said, oh, £16,000. I said, well, the chief exec gets £200,000 and you're doing all the worry for it. I said, how insane is it? Because you can't change anything. You're so far down the ranks, you can't do anything about the problems other than highlight them. And you think about it. We do it in our lives daily. We burden
ourselves. In our own trenches, yes, absolutely.
We are. And we then choose to put the dirt on top of ourselves. But it's a choice that we make. And that's what we're saying. Grow up. Wake up.
Well, you know, what I'd like to do, Rob, just because we only have about 30 minutes left in the show, and I do want to offer our listeners the opportunity to call in and ask you questions if they so desire. But I'd like to touch upon, you know, many of us are awakening and being called to certain things that we're really not sure yet. We haven't formulated. We don't know exactly what they are. You know, we've had discussions about this on the show previously about, you know, what are we emerging, what's emerging from us and what, you know, we should allow to emerge from us and let it flow. You know, there are many levels of awakening on one's journey, you know, and some are just beginning to turn inside, you know, knowing that there's more to their existence and their purpose. And then there are those, you know, people that are assisting others on those journeys because they're a little bit more equipped with the tools from their own awakenings. And then you have those that are being called beyond, like such as you and myself and many of our listeners on the show, where you absolutely feel there's no choice but to move in this direction. So, you know, now that we've awakened, and I mentioned this about this particular show tonight, you know, what's now what? What's next? You know, and I believe that resonation has been key throughout everyone's journey. You know, it's that remembering, that recalling of our true being. And, you know, it's a community thread that's woven through every soul in humanity and all of life. So if people were to really embrace this DVD and this, you know, that's eventually going to rapidly, I believe, evolve into a wonderful, wonderful project, you know, gaining rapid momentum, you know, how is it that the DVD is going to help them? What is it exactly going to do for them?
Well, we believe that what it's going to show people is that you should believe in your first impressions, your first instincts. Very quickly, I've had it said to me, how does an accountant come up with something like this? Well, I don't know, to be quite honest with you. I've had this concern for people's well-being for a long time in my life. As I said, I spent nearly 30 years of my life being a surf lifesaver here, giving up every second weekend. And it was selfish because I wanted to be a competitor, and you had to do A to B, B. But then when this project started to materialize, and I would just wake up with these visions in my head about what I had to do that day. At first, I started to try and analyze it. But in analyzing it, we lose it. I don't know if many people out there have heard of a gentleman by the name of Carlos Castaneda. Now, he went on a journey, and what he was shown by his mentors was that you've got to stop questioning everything. If we go back to the roots of indigenous cultures, they just accept. They don't have to know why and all the rest of it. We can spend so much time trying to find out what the why is that we lose the opportunity. We just have to go with what feels good at the time. We've got to stop sitting back trying to pull everything apart and analyze it as we've done with everything. Because by the time we finish doing it, the opportunity's gone, the incentive's gone, that aha moment that we have has passed us, and we've turned it into something that it wasn't meant to be. I believe that we have all of those thoughts, those inspirations, those visions come to us because it's the voices of the past speaking. I believe that it's, as you said before, Susie, so correctly, the thoughts that we're putting out there into the universe, connecting with us and saying that this is what we have to do. We just have to do it without thinking because that's the right thing to do. The moment we start to slow down and think about it and try and analyze it and, for want of a better expression, westernize it, it's gone. And we've turned it into something that it wasn't supposed to be. That first impression that we get is what's supposed to be. Now, we would run into roadblocks with the process and the project. And I would just go to bed that night and I would just say, give me the answer. And that's all I'd say. And then suddenly, maybe at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I'd just get this shock come into my system. And I'd sit up and I'd go, oh, right, that's what we've got to do next. And then I'd go into the production studio the next day and they'd go, how did you come up with that? And I'd go, I don't know. Who cares? We've got it. Let's just do it. And we found that once we started to do that, it flowed. The times that we slowed down and questioned why, it just went into a debate. It went into people's opinions coming into it, and we lost the thread.
The resistance.
Yes. And we create that resistance by falling back into the habits of the past. And they are hard to break. We've got to remember that we've had years of it, of being, you know, you must. You have to. Why? Because it doesn't feel right. And I believe that the people that we've attracted to this project to date, and we're only on the first level of this. What has happened since then is that we've had a number of people that come forward and said, why wasn't I involved with it? A very good friend of mine out of Detroit, who's a doctor up there, she wants to make contributions to it. We were going to share this, and I'll weave it in now. I actually ran into Dr. John DeMartini yesterday at a show I was at to see Don. And that man is absolutely fascinating. And I think everybody out there realizes it. I just wonder if he can talk in a straitjacket. His hands are so animated. Anyway.
Yes, that's his Italian coming through, yes.
Oh, very much so. I thought, by God.
If you could see me now, right now, Robert, I'm doing the same thing, but that's okay.
Well, I'm sitting on mine because I can't hold the phone in one hand and wave mine around everywhere. But at the end of his show, I knew that I had to speak to him. And I thought, I just want to clarify one other thing. It's been very humbling, this whole journey, but very early on in the piece, I got an email from somebody in the Philippines. And I will remind everybody that I've returned to Australia after almost 14 years in London. Anyway, I got an email from somebody in the Philippines, and they said, why didn't you tell us that you were emigrating? And I thought, I don't even know this person. So I just replied to them. And this is, again, the power of the universe. And I said, well, you know, we came back here for family reasons. And I got another one back saying, we didn't know you came from Australia. I thought, this is strange. And a couple of months later, I was at somebody from the DVDs place, a gentleman by the name of Rick Schnabel. And I walked in, and he had a friend of theirs that had written a number of books for children. And she stood up, and she's going, oh, I've waited so long to meet you. And I said, oh, thank you. And then she said, I've read all your books. And suddenly I realised the mistake that was going on. And I said, I'm not that Robert Anthony. And I think if you people over there know, you have a Dr. Robert Anthony.
Get rich, yes.
Yes.
How to get rich.
Yes. Yep. And for a long time, people have confused me with him. But that's the power of the universe, again. So I thought, why is me going to get to John DeMartini? And it was easy. I just walked up to him, I put my hand on his shoulder, and I said, we have something here that you need to know about. And I passed him a copy of a friend of mine's book called The Wheel of Life that you'll find on our website, and the DVD. And I said, I don't know why, I said, but you're a part of this. The moment he looked at them, the instant connection on his face was absolutely incredible, and he's promised to get back in touch with us. I didn't want to do any more because I knew his time was very precious. He had people waiting everywhere. But that 2 to 3 seconds, I know that he will get back to us. And that's the things that we have to run with. People said to me before, you can't go and do that to him. I said, why not? I said, because these projects are bigger than the individual, and I've gone to great lengths to let everybody know that this isn't about me. This is about saving the world. This is about saving us. This is about listening to everything that we know innately and to stop slowing down and questioning it. It's about when the time comes that we open up and we accept the advice that we're going to be given, because it will come. You know, it's prophesied about that there's going to be a time where we are approached by the leaders with the real knowledge, and that we will be provided with the answers that we're looking for. And we're going through a preparedness. We're going through a time where we need to open up and awaken ourselves to all of this knowledge. We've been very fortunate in the project to have one of the native leaders down here, a lady by the name of Carolyn Briggs, and she sits on the World Indigenous stage. She has a lot of respect around the world. She's been invited onto forums in the United Nations. But the one thing that she brings to us is the fact that the young leaders are preparing themselves. They have the knowledge, they have the stories, they have the energy to get out there and make this big difference. And I think that that's where we're headed for. And I would like to believe that this whole process is one about the connections, about breaking down those barriers in a whole raft of areas in our lives, and just opening up at last. And that's why we're absolutely convinced that in moving into this age, that we're moving from the head to the heart, that we are moving into this age where our imaginations will give us the benefits of all the wisdom of previous years, and that this innate intelligence is beginning to kick in. And I think it's one of the reasons why so many people find themselves in a state of dilemma, of self-doubt, because of these conflicting things that are going on. We see one set of messages on the media and in the papers. We see something else in our heads, and we feel something else yet again in our hearts.
Well, again, that's the resonation that's really key. I mean, can you really sit? I know I can't sit in front of the television anymore. You know, and if I do, if I happen to be witnessing something, that knowing just, you know, further spawns me on to the excitement that I have about where we're going. You know, it just, it infuses that energy going in the direction that I want to go.
Yes, I know. And that's the beauty of where we're at. That we are beginning to understand that this power can't be stopped. And whereas in the past, probably our parents and our grandparents wrestled with the problems, I think we're so much wiser now. And what's happening is that we're accepting it. We're beginning to get to a point where we're not as accepting as what we used to be. And the people on the call and some very privileged people are probably a lot more advanced than what the rest of the population are. And that's the journey that we have to do, is to spread this information. The DVD, we've actually targeted women in society to receive this information more so than men, and I don't mean this to be derogatory, but I believe that women are the ones that are more open to the information. Men are beginning to get there, but I think it's because women have always come more from the heart than what men have. We carry a lot of baggage where we're taught that we shouldn't cry, we shouldn't be this, you know, you've got to be tough. Well, there's nothing tough in it. If anything, we're closing down so much of our lives because of this very factor. Just a very quick share is I've got one of the women off the DVD is doing a lot of counselling at the moment with victims of the bushfires that you may have heard of earlier in the year. And they were devastating. It raised total communities and a lot of lives were lost. But in the aftermath of what's happened, they're now battling two things. There are people holding their hand out saying, I need help, because people saw absolutely ghastly things, animals running along, totally inflamed and bursting into balls of fire, birds dropping from the sky, like it was like Armageddon. Those people are holding their hand out, well, some of them. But then you come to another cross-section, and I believe that you would find it in your societies too, is the people who have grown up with the culture embedded in them that we're tough, that we're above all of this, that we're men, or you know, the women who have been taught that, you know, through every adversity, you know, the Smiths keep going on and we don't bow down. What a load of rubbish. I went through something similar in London with the ambulance service over there, where they were in denial about post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Right.
We're human beings, and if we go back to that first bit about how we're here for each other and this innate intelligence kicks in, doesn't matter how hard we are, doesn't matter how ingrained things are into us, we've all got a breaking point. We've all got something where you stack enough of it up, it will crush us. Because at the end of the day, we have got this innate intelligence in us that says that we are here for each other, that we have to connect, that we are, that love is the answer. And
right.
What, you know, we find so hard with wars and conflicts, you know, the how against our grain is it to teach somebody to hurt somebody else? You've either got to do it in a pack situation where you get that adrenaline fix from somebody beside you, and you know, you want to be part of a gang. But when you get people alone, the guilt kicks in, the internal dialogue kicks in, and we get depression, we get stress, we get all the other diseases in society, and that's because we're going against who we really are.
Right, that's what's manifesting. You know, Robert, I don't want to cut you off here, but we do have someone on the line waiting with a question and comment, and I just, before we bring her on, I'd like to, you know, just mention that, you know, this platform that we're on right now, I think it's just so amazing because we have people that are listening to the show from Canada, from London, from India, Chile, Turkey, Spain, Belgium, New Zealand, and even Antarctica. So I want to give a shout out to all of the people that are connected and listening to this call this evening. Special shout out to Fedgno in Antarctica, because that's amazing. Anybody who lives there, to me, it's just amazing. And, you know, just know,
well,
Robert, that...
Well, that's your goal,
yeah. just,
he's done one more than Tiger Woods.
You're right. And just knowing that the, you know, the reach that we have now and the people that are being attracted and seeking this information, that are seeking the connection and the resonation to what their emergency is, and I don't mean emergency like in the way that we know it, but to really see what's connecting with them and, you know, seeding them and feeding them and fueling their passions through who they really are. So I'd like to bring on our caller, if that's okay, because we only have about 11 minutes left, so we're going to have to make this quick. Also, I just want to let our listeners know, if you're not on the show page, you can receive this DVD, the Wheel of Life DVD, on the website, which is www.wheeloflife.tv. Okay, and it's a wonderful site. It's filled with great information, and I know that you've had some challenges with it, Robert, but I'm sure they're going to work themselves out. So,
yeah, look, there are a few challenges, and one of them is that we've got some free giveaways that aren't working at the moment. So anybody who pops over there, just drop us a note on the Contact Us page, and we'll get everything sorted out. But it's really...
an inspiring movie, and I'm looking forward to getting the copy myself, but the trailer was enough for me. So hold on 1 second, and I'm going to bring on our caller. Welcome, 970.
Hi, Susie. It's Nanette.
Hi, Nanette.
Hi, Robert.
How are you, Nanette?
Awesome show. I am doing really great, and I had no idea that an event that just happened in the last week would be so pertinent to this show. and I'll make it very quick because I know we're running out of time, but my 15-year-old son had his life threatened in high school last week.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid that was threatening his life, the school believed the kid was capable of this behavior, and they had me hold my son out of school for 2 days because they couldn't protect him, promised that they could protect him. The knife had been seen that the kid intended to use on my son.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into the school and I talked to the administration and I said, when does this stop? And they said, well, as soon as we find the kid and talk to him, we'll let you know. And I said, no, I mean, in the bigger picture, when does it stop? And they did end up speaking to the this other kid that was harassing my son. This kid was being bullied, and he lives in a tent. He's homeless. His mother is not doing well. And when I told my son this after I got off the phone with the school, he said, I will be his friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, seriously? And he goes, yes, I will be his friend. So we made an arrangement for the two boys to talk in the school in an aquarium-type room so that adults mm-hmm. could be present without listening.
Yep.
And my son walked into the room, shook his hand, and said, my mother says that Abraham Lincoln used to say, I don't like that person too much. Maybe I should get to know them. And the two boys sat down, talked for an hour and a half, and they are friends. And I was asked to go to the police, press charges, get a restraining order, and I didn't have to.
No.
Because these kids connected, and they said, you know, we don't want this to go that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything you've just said just falls into place beautifully.
Look, it's so easy. And on the DVD, this gentleman, Rick Schnabel, that I mentioned before, actually mentions it when we talk about relationships. And we show a fairly harsh bit of footage where somebody's running around the streets of London and there's nobody around. And I think there was a movie with Will Smith. I can't remember the name of it at the moment, but it's where he's the last person on earth.
I Am Legend.
That's right, I'm Legend. That's it. We feel so bad because at the end of the day, what we miss in all of this is exactly what you said. We're here to be connected. We're here for each other. Where would the people like Gates and Branson and that be if they didn't have an audience for their bragging rights? We forget it so often, and it's what I said before, the instinctive thing where we see somebody hurt and we slow down. And then all of this rubbish that we're being taught about not being involved kicks in, and we just cannot handle it. And as I said, you know, one of the beautiful things that I've been able to achieve in the last 12 months in working with my friend Carolyn is that we're breaking down these barriers by admiring their determination not to be subjected to ridicule or whatever we want to call it. And it's sad. Look, one of the things that we, and it's idealistic, it's, this whole project is very philanthropic in nature, is that we want to set up nutrition kitchens around the world for exactly the situation that you're talking about. People do live differently. We don't all have the same sets of circumstances presented to us at birth. But why shouldn't people live with dignity? By having what we want to do with the proceeds is we want, as I said, we want to establish some media to get into schools and show children about a whole myriad of things, including family values and even social values. So you take a child and you put them in a shopping mall and with a group of other kids and they become the bane on everybody's life. You get those same children in their home environment and butter wouldn't melt in their mouth. It's about showing them that there's this relationship, there's this respect that we have to have for each other. But more so than anything else, it's about embracing each other and this connectedness that we're in denial about. And that's the whole process. But, you know, if we can, through the proceeds of the DVD, if we can establish what we would like to do, imagine that what we can do. Giving people back their dignity, that they don't have to fish through rubbish bins even, that if you, out of a drink, one drink a day that's from vegetables and fruits, you get more nutrition into some of these people's bodies than they've had in a lifetime. It's about educating people about the value of the resources of the planet. And you know, our Indigenous colleagues, brothers, whatever we want to call them, have had it right when they call the Earth our mother, because she feeds us. And it's that disrespect and that disconnection that's we've got to reestablish, and we've got to stop vying away from it. And I think once we do that, and we hand it across to the children, just like your son did,
mm-hmm.
and rise above it. And we have got so many great examples. You look at Lincoln, you look at even the Kennedys. You know, some men see things as they are and ask why. Others see things that aren't and ask why not. We've got to get more to the why not.
You know,
absolutely.
Robert, I truly believe that, you know, and when kids come home with history projects and they're so involved in the school systems with the history,
mm-hmm.
my motto is forget the history. Let's create new history, you know, because
yep.
to go back there and meddle in all of that stuff, because you ask, you know, whoever got that stuff right, who wrote all about that,
mm.
you know, and
mm-hmm.
the person it was, and what, you know, what can we do moving forward? And even though Nanette's son used that term, you know, about Abraham Lincoln, that's taking the good part of history, which is really how it's real hard sometimes to find that in the history books. So by taking all the quotes and the good feeling stuff that comes from our history and bringing that forward, just all the way back to Buddha, all the way back to our Indigenous cultures, you know, I really appreciate this momentum that's building because of all of that.
Well, we've just got to add to it and make sure that we give it the forward momentum that it requires, because the only things that matter are today and tomorrow. You know, the one of the people on the DVD in the special feature that's on there talks about a time that the Buddhist novices go through, and they're asked two questions, and the questions are, where am I and what time is it?
Yeah.
Where am I? I'm here. And what time is it? Now.
Now.
And
exactly.
And
you know what?
That's what we've got to... And we're here for a purpose. Everybody on this call today is here for a purpose.
Yes, we
and
are.
When you get off, all we have to do is sit there and have... You don't even need 5 or 10 minutes to reflect. You just need a moment where you clear your mind and the answers will come to you, because we already have the answers. The answers are within each and every one of us, and it's the other message that we try and get through, that we have the answers within.
Yes, Robert, thank you so much. You know, we're out of time, so I really
yep.
need to get going. But thank you so much for sharing the wisdom and the insights, and hopefully everyone will tune in and receive the DVD on your website. That's www.wheeloflife.tv. Robert, I want to have you back again with Don. I think this is a real, real important message to get out to everyone, and I thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you, and if everybody out there could just do us the favor of sharing it with the people that they love.
Yes, and connect
with... Thank you, everybody.
And connect with Don and Robert on Facebook as well, if you're on Facebook. All right, take care, everyone, and remember to find the joy in enjoying your journey. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Take care.